Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school, Rock School, with your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns and Chad P.
If from the get-go to have them step on it, or do you think they had a couple of prototypes where the guy actually had to bend down and push a button with his hands?
I don't know. I wish I had an answer to that. Well, a lot of the guitarists...
Somebody does it for them?
Yeah, somebody does it for them. I wouldn't want that.
Mm-mm,
I'd want to be in charge of my own stuff.
Sure.
Class is in.
Time for another Rock School show here on Rock School Radio Network. My name is Joe Burns, a professor in the communication department, Southeastern Louisiana University. Who are you?
Chad Burns.
There, see? Tipping the topic. Yes, very nicely
done. Can you figure
that
out?
Yeah, it's distortion we're talking about today. Most everybody thinks of distortion in the Beavis and Butthead method of it, where you go right through the teeth distortion.
Yeah.
These are my favorite kinds of shows, by the way. These that have all kinds of little scientific-y things in there.
Basically
little...
the stuff I don't like.
Yeah, I love them. Absolutely.
The antagonized Chad shows.
But yeah, well, you're a drummer, you know. Hit things. This has a whole lot of little, you know, nuances in
sure.
here. Let's go back to the beginning of it all. Where this all started, the concept of placing distortion on an instrument, because I'm trying to think what other instrument you actually place distortion upon. You harmonically distort the instrument. Most of the time, you want an instrument to be as clear as possible.
Yes.
You know, you put it on, you know, you can hear it in Deep Purple. They put it on the keyboards and such. But the guitar is generally known for having distortion upon it.
Of course.
Why do you put distortion on it?
To make it heavy, to give it an
edge. Yeah, to carry out more harmonics, to carry out more sound.
Take it up a notch.
Right, take it up a notch. Bam, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Like most effects in the world of, you know, electronic music, it was a mistake.
It was a mistake.
Distortion stuttered is a mistake. Flange was a mistake. Phase is a mistake. What you then want to do is figure, how can I make a flange sound or a phase sound or a distortion sound controllable?
Mm-hmm.
I like that sound. I like the mistake. Supposedly, the first distorted guitar, some people can argue with me, was Rocket 88. The cone in the speaker was warped because it got hit with water.
And I remember when we talked about that.
Right,
yeah.
And it went, it was a mistake.
It was a great sounding mistake.
Right. It's not supposed to be that way. It's a mistake. How can we get that sound again?
Get some water.
Get some water, sure, and pour it on there. I have a few early songs in the world of distortion, and we're going to play a few of them for you. I'll tell you how they got the distortion, and then we'll get into how it's done today, which is really fun because you get people talking about dirty distortion, clean distortion, which is a real oxymoron. But let's go back to 1955.
Yeah.
Chuck Berry's Maybelline. Listen to the guitar. It's distorted. How does he get it? He gets it through his power tubes. In the amplifier were tubes. And he turned it up so loud that the tubes got hotter than they should have.
Yeah.
He was actually putting his amplifier at risk. Again, a mistake. How can I get this sound without actually destroying my amplifier? Listen to it. When we get back, I'll tell you a general idea of how you get the sound. And then we're going to talk about what a lot of people call card in the spokes distortion. So this is it. Chuck Berry. Listen, 1955. Maybelline. Sounds like this. Rock School.
Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline, why can't you be true? You done started doing the things you used to do. You done started back doing the things you used to do.
They go, Maybelline, Chuck Berry here on Rock School.
Oh, you have this little glow about you when you're talking about stuff that, you know, you really get excited about and I don't really care for.
Probably heard it 100 times, but is that the first time you actually stopped and listened to the distortion on the guitar?
Maybe.
It's a little overdriven there. Now, it's done because he, Chuck Berry, had the amplifier up so loud that the tubes that were inside of it basically created what was known then as a warm distortion.
So all he did was crank it up.
Crank it up.
Turn it up.
That's
turn
right.
it up. Turn
now,
it up.
The amplifiers back then didn't have the guts that the amplifiers do today, so that's the sound he got.
Sure.
Now, we're going to get into it a little later on about how they're using amplifiers today
so
to do it.
It didn't sound like that at first. As it heated up, sound chain.
The old tube amplifiers, you had to get them heated up. You couldn't just flick them on like the solid-state ones today.
I got
you. They took a little bit of time. How does it work? This is really the Fisher-Price version of it. Take my word for it.
That's all I want.
Right. You've got a tube.
Yes.
Tube has a filament in it.
Yes.
That's the thing that gets real red and hot when you turn
like
it on.
Sure, it's like a light bulb.
It gives off electrons, creating an electron cloud, if you will, which then falls down against a plate. If you can think of an amplifier as something that doesn't technically amplify something, it simply takes a signal, reproduces it louder.
Mm-hmm.
When you take that tube and turn it up real loud or as hard as you can get it, it creates so much that it basically overdoes the signal. And that's where the harmonic distortion comes from.
Mm-hmm.
That's the vacuum tube sound. How did they get, furthermore, other kinds of distortion? Well, you're probably familiar with the song Train Kept a Rollin'.
Oh, I am.
You know the one by the Johnny Burnett Trio?
You know
that version?
Yes, I do.
The sound of the guitar that's got that little buzz inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
How did he get it? The amplifier had multiple tubes in it. He took one of the tubes and dislodged it a little bit.
See, there y'all go.
Right. So
little engineers screwing with stuff.
The electricity would arc. And because of the arc, it buzzed. It's a mistake, but it's being done correctly.
Right, because he shouldn't have broke out a screwdriver in the first place. Just play the guitar and leave it alone.
1956, Paul Burleson from the Johnny Burnett Trio. Listen to it. When you hear that, it's because he dislodged one of the tubes. Sounds like this as we talk about distortion on Rock School. Johnny Burnett Trio. Now, you only heard the distortion on that when the guitar dipped down into the lower notes.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the tube amplifier apparently had the electronic oomph to actually buzz on it. The higher notes could simply pass right through it. It acted kind of like a gate. And whoop, went
so
right
he
it.
Pulled the tube, he fooled around with the tube, played the song, which only activated the sound when he hit a specific note, or did he play the song and at some point pull the tube out?
Oh,
and
no, you can't touch the tube.
Huh?
Oh, goodness, no, you can't touch the tube.
Well, I guarantee you one of you idiots probably tried it.
Oh, I'm sure. I don't doubt it, but that idiot no longer has fingerprints.
Well, then how do you...
Well, you dislodge it and then turn the machine on.
Well, I wasn't insinuating that you do it during the song, you banana head.
You dumb.
Right.
I mentioned during the first break the concept of card in the spokes.
Yes.
You know, how many
bicycles.
Times, right. You hook with a clothespin,
mm-hmm.
you put a baseball card in there, and as it goes, listen, it sounds like a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't. It sounds like... right. I've heard it called by different names, but the way my friends and I and the people who taught us the instruments always referred to it was the card in the spokes. Two songs I have to kind of show this off. Link Wray's Rumble, and then we'll go into Dave Davies of the Kinks, You Really Got Me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll start with Link Wray's Rumble. How did he get that really hard, distorted sound? Well, he had a smaller amplifier, which he was, you know, cranking up. He also had one of the new Les Pauls with the PAF, patent applied for pickups, and he was overdriving that into the amplifier. But if you listen to it, it's got kind of a buzz to it when it plays. What did he do? Think of an amplifier, the actual speaker, the cone.
Yeah,
he took a pencil and he poked holes through it.
You can't do that.
Well, he did.
You're not supposed to.
The card in the spokes format is that when the thing shook, you know, a speaker creates sound by pushing forward and moving air. It's shaped like a cone. When he put the you know, the pencil through it, you had pieces of the cone paper mm-hmm. rubbing against each other, mm-hmm. and they buzzed. That's the distortion in there. That's one of the first examples of it. We're still not to the little machines that make distortion.
No, I get it.
Guys were doing it by destroying the machines that they had.
I want to hear the stories about the tricks they tried that didn't work.
Those are the people that are dead. Yeah. Here's Link Wray, 1958. Listen for the holes in the speaker. Rock School. Link Wray here on Rock School.
You ever tried to fool with an amp?
No, not a lot, because I didn't have a lot of money. The amps that I had had to work. I wasn't a working musician. I carried bags at a golf course.
You fool around with stuff like that, and you can ruin it.
Sure you can.
You're like, well, that didn't work. And you better hope that you wrote it down, because the next time you get the money to buy one, you might try it again.
Right. You poke too many holes in the cone, and the cone will no longer move air forward. Or you poke the holes too close to one another, and the cone will literally rip, and it will no longer work.
You guys are amazing.
Yeah, well,
I hope you documented this stuff. Now take a number two pencil and poke three holes, not four, three.
Why am I positive somewhere someone has mapped out the holes?
I'm sure there has. Uh-huh.
In 1964, remember, this is the same time in the 60s, this is the same time Jim Marshall, you know, as in Marshall amplifiers, is starting to put out heavier and heavier amplification. It was in 66 that he starts putting out the 100 watters and such, but he's still playing around with it. Dave Davies of the Kinks. I always say Ray when I want to say Davies with the Kinks, but Dave Davies of the Kinks, to get the hard-edged distortion, because, you know, they were the Kinks. They wanted to be the hardest, loudest thing around at the time. They took the same idea as Link Wray, but instead of poking holes, they wanted longer distortion, harder distortion. If a hole would make a little distortion, a razor slit would make better distortion. Well, the thought process is the longer the cut, mm-hmm. the more paper there is to rub against the sides of it.
I reckon that we're Makes going from sense. Pencils to razors.
Why not?
It's getting dangerous.
So from 1964, you really got me. Now, a lot of people also believe this is the first track that really made distortion something that was equal to the guitar. If mm-hmm. you played rock guitar, it had to be distorted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that's true or not, but...
But you like distortion on your guitar.
I do. I'm not sure if it started there, but if that helps and you want to lick your finger and touch a timeline and say, that's it, okay, here you go. You really got me. Listen for the slits cut into the cone, and it sounds like this. Rock School. That's You Really Got Me. You hear all the buzzing in there?
I did. He must have had a sharp razor.
He did. Let's continue on and get out of this card in the spokes format. I want to move to these actual little boxes.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of the stomp boxes, where you see guitarists reach up and stomp on something.
Sure.
What they're dealing with is inline effects.
Okay.
These are where the chord comes out of the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
On that chord is a box of some kind.
Sure.
And then the line then into the amplifier.
What a step pedal or something.
You got it. Mm-hmm. A stomp box. You've heard of the Ventures. Probably Walk, Don't Run.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yep.
The Ventures were aligned with a guy by the name of Orville Red Rhodes. He was an electronics guy. Mm-hmm. It was one of those, I need it to do this, I need the sound to do this, I need the sound to do this. A sound was created on a song called Don't Worry. Now, I don't have the song Don't Worry, but Don't Worry, I don't have the song. Don't Worry was the song. The people of the Ventures liked the buzz that was on the guitar.
Right.
However.
There's a however. There's always a however.
Well, think of all the stuff you had to do. Cut the cone, poke through the cone, overdrive the amplifier. You're hurting the amps, right?
For one song, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the people of the Ventures went to Orville Red Rose and said, can you create something, some electronic something
that we can produce this sound without having to split open our cone?
I need something that creates a sound that doesn't hurt the amplifier.
Okay.
Orville Red came back and gave him this little thing he called the fuzz box.
The fuzz box.
Fuzz box. Now, people out there going, hey, I use fuzz today. You bet. Lots of songs with fuzz. The song that was recorded with this little box was in 1962, called A 2,000 Pound Bee. You hear it on the rhythm guitar. It's the one that starts the song. The lead guitar is fairly clean. The rhythm guitar is the one you have, and you will hear it almost immediately. Sounds like this. Ventures with the Red Rhodes Fuzz Box. Like this. Rock School. All right, time for the first break here on Rock School. Did you hear the buzzing on the guitar?
I heard the buzzing and the fuzzing and the stabbing and all the other stuff.
The way Red Rhodes claims he got that sound was he basically created a box that would recreate the sound of a broken preamplifier.
Fine.
It's a mistake. How can we make the mistake happen? None of this stuff really relates to me just giving you the information and moving on. They all need a song next to them. So let's do this first break real quick. Hello, Radio Universidad Salamanca, Spain. Thanks for running the radio show.
Hello, KSCL in Shreveport, Louisiana. No joke for you this week.
That was just moving along. Get us on Facebook. Search Rock School Radio Show. Back in a minute, and we'll talk further about the fuzz box and where you can hear it right here. Rock School. Rock School is sponsored exclusively by Subway, but not just any Subway, Mike and Emily Williams Subway, 345 South Morrison Boulevard in Hammond. They have catering with delivery, 6-inch subs and footlong subs available, 345-4194. That's the phone number, 345-4194. What kind of subs? Steak and cheese, roast beef, Italian BMT, meatball marinara, and the cold cut combo, plus, of course, the chicken and bacon ranch milk. Once again, Rock School sponsored exclusively by Mike and Emily Williams and their Subway, 345 South Morrison Boulevard in Hammond, 345-4194. Okay, out of the break, let's keep talking about the fuzz pedal. Once again, this is a stomp box. This is a box you step on, and it gives you a distorted sound.
Was it their idea from the get-go to have them step on it, or do you think they had a couple of prototypes where the guy actually had to bend down and push a button with his hands?
I don't know. I wish I had an answer to that.
Well, it would make sense. I mean, yeah. You're playing guitar. How are we going to activate this? Well, with your foot.
Well, anymore, they're activated off stage. A lot of the guitarists...
Somebody does it for them?
Yeah, somebody does it for them. I wouldn't want that.
Mm-mm,
I'd want to be
neither.
In charge of my own stuff.
Sure, sure.
Bruce Springsteen was just on TV not too long ago, and the guitarists, their guitar was just going into phase and going out of distortion and going in. Somebody off stage was doing it for them.
Yeah, because when you're in that moment and you decide, like, oh, this isn't normally whenever I do the distortion, but now I want to go ahead and do it, and I want to be in charge of it. I'm like you.
I want that done. Where can you hear fuzz? Well, fuzz is really a distortion that's related to the 60s. It's a specific kind of distorted sound. Keith Richards' I Can't Get No Satisfaction was done with a Gibson Maestro fuzz. You're going to hear it with Muse. They do it all the time. Eric Johnson is also a huge fuzz fan. Think Iron Butterflies in a Gotta Da Vida.
Mm-hmm.
Think Cream with Eric Clapton. Mm-hmm. That 1960s fuzz sound.
Sure, sure.
However, as with any distortion sound, you can alter it. No Time Left for You by the Guess Who?
Mm-hmm.
That was a fuzz box, but so is this. Ernie Isley got one of the greatest fuzzy sounds on a guitar ever inside of Who's That Lady. It's got a little phase on there as well, but the distortion on the instrument is a pure fuzz box, and it's the weirdest funky sound you ever come up with. And it sounds like this. Fuzz. Right here. Rock School.
Ha ha!
Okay, bottom of the hour, plus a couple of minutes there. I had forgotten how long the Isley Brothers song really was.
Let me ask you a quick question before we start.
Shoot.
You're using a fuzz box, but I imagine that the sound is going to vary depending on what guitar you're pushing
Everything.
Through it, right?
Oh, it all varies. I have a whole show set up just on guitar pickups.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And it's not just the pickups, it's the strings, it's how hard you hit them. There's just a thousand different ways to alter the sound. A fuzz box to me and a fuzz box to another guitarist are going to sound totally different depending on 20 different factors.
Then I'm assuming that it's probably a little frustrating for a guitarist. He's got a sound in his head, a particular sound. He gets this fuzz box and he plays. He's like, no, that's not what I'm looking for. That's not what I hear in my head. Let me change guitars. Let me change strings.
Well, that's why
never get that sound.
Right, when people try to recreate their favorite guitar, say Stevie Ray Vaughan, why can't I sound like him? Well, do you have the old original Vox amplifier?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the old original guitar? Do you have the perfectly wound original Fender pickups, single coil pickups? Are you using the heaviest strings known to man?
Right, you've got to get about as authentic as as you can.
And then it's from the elbows down.
Yeah.
Do you play like him? So, all right, let's do, what do you got here? 7 days, 70 seconds. These dates, March 12th through March 18th. Monday, Chad, go.
March 12th, 1998, the group Korn actually served a Michigan assistant principal with a cease and desist demand to have her stop the suspension of a student because the student was wearing one of the band's tour shirts.
Yep. March 13th, 1987, Bryan Adams' song, Heart of the Night, becomes the first commercially released cassette single in the United States.
That single, you remember those?
No. Block them out.
March 14th, 1956, the movie Rock Around the Clock made its U.S. debut in D.C.
March 15th, 2004, a judge denies Axl Rose's demand to stop Universal Music Group's release of a Guns N' Roses Greatest Hits LP. UMG, Universal Music Group, states they have every right to release the album to recoup the costs that they had lost waiting for Axl to deliver Chinese Democracy.
Yeah, how many years did it take?
10, I think. Decade.
March 16th, 1979. Here's one for you. Okay. Twisted Sister became the first group to sell out, do you know it, New York City's what?
Oh, it's the place where the Clash, they show them throwing the base, the Palladium.
The Palladium, very good. They sold out the Palladium without ever releasing a record.
Right.
They wouldn't be signed for three more years.
Right. March 17th, 1998, an epochal event in the world of Van Halen. They released Van Halen 3 with lead singer Gary Cherone, late of Extreme. Lousy album. And then finally, March 18th, 1999, France's largest music retailer, Fnac. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. Fnac becomes the first major music retailer to sell downloads of music online all the way back in 1999.
Yepper.
Let's continue on with distortion. Power amplifier distortion.
Didn't you already talk about this?
No. I was talking about Chuck Berry way back when, before amplifiers really could handle it. Now they can. Amplifiers, again, tube, also with solid state. If you turn them way up, I mean turn them up till it is ripping loud, they will distort. That's one of the purposes of turning them up so loud.
Okay.
And they will create a warmish, nice-sounding distortion. Bonnie Raitt does this. Vox Amplifier. Thin Lizzy used to do this. He did it with a Marshall stack. Jimmy Page did it with his Marshalls. Tom Morello, that's my guess. I think Morello does it by doing this. He always plays in a drop D because the lower the notes, the more harmonic grab you
can
do.
You know, when you're talking about getting into the world of little mini engineering, as I like to refer to you guys as, Tom Morello is a madman.
I would think so.
You look him up on YouTube, and he's got all kind of little tricks and everything that
anything
he does
to get the sound. And then AC/DC. There's all kinds of websites out there that show the stage gear of people that play. And it's got a thousand little foot stomp boxes and all this kind of stuff. AC/DC, guitar, cord, amplifier. That's it.
Turn it up.
That's right. That's going it. Straight in and turn it up to 11 and go. That's the way they've played from the beginning.
Kiss principle.
Yeah. Keep it simple, stupid, because I'm TNT. Listen, the distortion is purely from the power amplifier. You'll hear it more on the lower notes, the lower chords, but all the distortion is created simply by taking the guitar and turning it up until it is ripping loud. Here you go. Act Deck. Rock School. in one more before the second break here on Rock School. We're talking about distortion and different ways to get it and different sounds. You can always tell a power amplifier distortion because it seems to be reliant on the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
It's much warmer and it seems to be stronger on certain sounds, certain
and
notes.
Kind of cleaner. Maybe a smoother sound?
Well, I think it's just warmer. When you're talking clean, you're talking about a distortion that almost gets a little more knife edge.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Right. That's what's known as a preamp distortion. When Jim Marshall separated on the Marshall amplifiers, when Jim Marshall separated the preamplifier from the amplifier mm-hmm. and gave you control over both of them, it was very quickly learned that if you turned the preamp up higher mm-hmm. than the amplifier,
yeah.
it would distort. There was
okay.
that point at which you sort of went over the knife edge
mm-hmm.
and off it went. Today's, I guess, not the tube you could really hurt, but today's solid state amplifiers allow you to jack the preamp way up above and just amplify every harmonic other than the root tone.
Now, when you're referring to the preamp,
yeah.
if I'm looking at an amplifier, how do I distinguish between, oh, that controls the preamp and this is...
They're labeled. They're labeled. That's
on
the piece of anodized aluminum.
But they're all on the same dial.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so you've got your master volume and then some different effects, and you've got somewhere the preamp and the amp.
At its very base, it's going to be something to the effect of master volume, preamp, volume, and then bass, mid. Sometimes it says high, sometimes it says presence,
sure.
sometimes you know, that kind of thing.
So it's you fool around with highs. Those things and you get the mix that you want.
Sure.
And then if you want to go ahead and increase that, you just take the master and crank it up.
You got it.
Okay. I'm getting there.
Preamp distortion is just such a clean, pretty distortion. It's the kind you're going to hear from Yngwie Malmsteen. That's mm-hmm. my guess. It's just too clean a distortion. His notes come so fast. And you can hear them so cleanly. Dimebag Darrell, I think he's clean. He's got to be preamp distortion. I doubt he uses a pedal, or if he does, he doesn't use it all the time. He's got six heads and six stacks on stage. So I think it's all done preamp. And this guy, Randy Rhodes, Tony Iommi, by the way, also does it with preamp distortion.
Mm-hmm.
Randy Rhodes, this is my guess. It's so metallic when he plays. I think he gets it out of preamp distortion. He just simply took his Marshalls, turned the preamp over higher than the amplifier, and got that unbelievable sound. Where are you going to hear it the most? We're going to play Crazy Train.
Mm-hmm.
When it first starts and the pick scrape occurs, listen to it. All of the high-end harmonics will just overtake it, and it will sound intensely metallic. Yep. There's your distortion.
Okay.
And you get that through preamp. So I'm willing to bet a little bit of money that Randy Rhodes got it all through the amplifier. Dimebag
cool.
Darrell, I'm not so sure. Somebody may call me on that one, but I think he gets it through the preamp distortion.
All aboard!
The Crazy Train, Rock School. Time for the second break here on Rock School, and I have got, well, three more types of distortion to tell you about. Let me do one that I probably won't be able to get to. The main sites that I got on here talked about all the kinds that I've hit already: power amplifier distortion, preamp distortion, all of that. And there was one that called it doing it wrong. It just got distortion.
That would be me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Slash got a lot of distortion by using a graphic equalizer, and what he did is instead of trying to use the EQ to make it kind of nice,
mm-hmm.
he took the mid-range and just blew it out the roof. And what it did is it distorted the guitar. James Hetfield said he told Guitar World one time that he increased the gain on his wireless system.
Okay.
And that gave him distortion as
just
well.
Turn it up. Turn it up.
Nine Inch Nails says he overdrives the channel on the mixing board.
Okay.
Yeah, so just about anything that will overdrive the system will get you distortion.
Some of the greatest guitarists and sounds, sounds like they just closed their eyes, chose a knob, and turned it up.
Turned it. See what happens. What's the worst that can happen?
Well, what do you mean the worst that can happen? You could get blown up against the back wall.
Yeah,
that's what could happen.
That's cool.
A la Marty McFly.
Yeah, very nice. Hello, KLSU. Thanks for running the radio show.
Hello, WBSD in Burlington, Wisconsin. Thanks so much for being part of the Rock School Radio Network.
Coming back with the one you're probably most used to. If you use distortion, you probably use this method. Back in a minute, Rock School.
Rock School is sponsored exclusively by Subway Restaurant, located at 345 South Morrison Boulevard in Hammond. Owners Mike and Emily Williams feature both 6-inch and foot-long subs at their Subway with catering service and optional delivery. The phone number is 985-345-4194. Every Subway from the Subway menu is available, including oven-roasted chicken breast, steak and cheese, sweet onion, chicken teriyaki, tuna, turkey breast, turkey melt, roast beef, and the cold-cut combo, just to name a few. That's Subway, 345 South Morrison Boulevard in Hammond, 985-345-4194. We thank Mike and Emily Williams and Subway.
Okay, last break here on Rock School. I got one more kind of distortion to tell you about, and it really depends on who you're listening to as to how it's done. It's called multiband distortion. Some players, Hendrix was known for this, will layer distorted guitars to make them even more distorted.
Ja?
Right. Alice in Chains did the same thing. Anthrax is known for layering distorted guitars, but what they'll do is they'll run them all through different amplifiers. So you don't get three equivalent distortions. You get three different distortions putting them together, which then grits the distortion even more.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get people like Mike Campbell of Tom Petty that uses multiple amp setups, like a Vox and a Fender over here, and the Vox has the distortion, and the Fender then is a clean sound, but that's where he puts his phase over there.
Sure.
And he'll have multiple, but only one amplifier will have one effect. Eddie Van Halen in live has a clean amp and a dirty amp.
Okay.
And the dirty amp carries the distortion, and the clean amp is in there for fill. So why can't I sound like Eddie Van Halen? Well, you're playing through two amplifiers?
You should stop trying to sound like people. You should invent your own sound. You and I are going to do this, okay? Tomorrow I want you to bring in one of your amps.
Yeah.
And I've got a cell phone, a spark plug, a glass of water, and a mousetrap.
Okay.
And a little bit of peanut oil. And
we're going for it.
Do what we can to create our own sound.
Maybe we'll sound like Brian May. He uses Roxtron equipment. Left has all of the effects. Right is always dry. So there you are, multiband distortion.
Why does right have to be dry?
I haven't the slightest idea.
You really want to throw people off? Switch them.
Please don't allow me to make bad jokes. Brian May is going to wrap us up. I hope you learned something and take something away from it. I'm Joe Burns.
Chad P.
There you go. Fat Bottom Girls. Class is dismissed.
You're gonna take me home tonight. Oh, down beside that red firelight. Fat bottom girls, you make the rockin' world go round.